Hello everyone, this is Dan Figella here with Tech Emergence, where we interview investors, researchers, and entrepreneurs in the domain of emerging technology, particularly where psychology and technology overlap, and that takes us oftentimes to the domain of augmented reality. Today I'm lucky enough to have with me a professor in the School of Interactive Computing, the fellow who, by the way, runs the Augmented Environments Lab at Georgia Tech, Mr. Blair McIntyre himself. Blair, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm glad we're able to connect. I know you've been in this domain for quite some time. You've been a professor for 15 years-ish over there and clearly pretty well immersed in the AR space. The first thing I wanted to touch on you with, I know you've dabbled a lot of projects from crossing human performance and augmented reality, and I know we're going to delve into sort of how the internet might interact with augmented reality. But I wanted to get into what, in your mind, in the last 10 years or so, have been some of the biggest leaps and developments in AR. You know, what's really let us get to the next level? What makes AR of today that much better than that of 10 years ago?
So I think the first big development was sort of small mobile devices, right? So when we went from having to do augmented reality using desktop computers and laptop computers and really expensive specialized technology, to being able to do it on mobile phones, PDAs, and so on, it allowed us to transition from AR being this curiosity that might be done in research labs or might be done in sort of the back-end parts of big companies or something, to something normal consumers could experience and potentially leverage in their lives. And so for us, for me, starting about 6-7 years ago, I moved from doing things with head-mounted displays and desktops and so on to experimenting with phones. Now, phones, tablets, and so on have limitations.
Yes.
In terms of the kind of experience you can deliver, right? A lot of what we think about when we think about augmented reality are these kinds of casual experiences that might present information to me that might be interesting at some point, but probably isn't as useful all the time to justify me taking up my phone and running an app and looking around.
Yep.
So I think as we move forward, for AR to really then go from lab to consumers but not that useful to really hitting the kinds of consumer uses that a lot of people imagine, we'll have to get back to sort of lightweight, consumer-friendly, head-mounted displays. And
got it.
I think we're starting to get there. But that to me was the biggest thing. And
it was phones.
Combined with just the ever-accelerating technology curve. So
yeah, how do you mean that particularly? I know there's so many facets of, you know, Kurzweil talks about his law of accelerating returns, but you know, what domains of the tech really have seen those leaps and bounds that have let your work and other researchers like yourself kind of take off to such another level?
Well, I mean, at a basic level, I think it's miniaturization and speed of the devices themselves, right? When I first started doing stuff on mobiles, you could barely do anything given the constraints, like the power of the CPU, the batteries,
yep,
the speed of the graphics. Now, you know, if you look at, say, software like Qualcomm's Vuforia or Mateo software, the computer vision that's inside there is actually quite impressive in terms of what it can do, how robust it is, and so on. And it's doing all of that work using only a fraction of the device, so you can still do other things.
Yeah.
So that, and then, you know, so then you take something like Qualcomm software, integrate it with the Unity game engine, and now anybody who could program using Unity can build an experiment with an AR, 3D interactive, really professional-looking, high-quality AR experience that can run on phones that most people have in their pockets now.
Yeah.
So the miniaturization has allowed us to really do more of the essential sensing that augmented reality requires, computer vision tracking, and so on. So that's the biggest thing, I think. There's still other limits that haven't been met. So outdoor, knowing where we are outdoors is a huge problem. I like to say to people that we can only augment those parts of the world that we know about. You know, we need to know where we are. We need to know everything around us.
Yep, yep.
And, you know, GPS hasn't gotten any better in the last 15 years, really.
Yeah, and I heard that there's some kind of limitations militarily, governmentally, on the accuracy of GPS for security reasons, and so maybe that, you know, there's restrictions to that. But yeah, you had mentioned that before. That do you think GPS alone could cut it in terms of AR to any level of resolution?
In theory,
really good GPS of the future.
Well, so if you get a surveying grade GPS, it gives you like 2 centimeter level tracking. Right?
Oh, that's pretty wild.
Right? But those things are still incredibly expensive and big. But you look at Kickstarter, or one of the Kickstarter, Indiegogo or something, had a Kickstarter where somebody was building an open source high precision GPS. So I think over time that will get better. Now, GPS is always going to be inherently limited to being outdoors, being in places you can see huge amounts of sky.
Yeah.
Which both correspond to mostly places where people aren't. And so GPS itself will always be limited, even if it's
really good, really calibrated. Right. Yeah.
You know, you're walking down the streets in Manhattan, and it's just not going to work.
Yeah, it's tough.
Buildings and so on. So the sensing is still a huge issue.
Yeah. What are those other hindrances? Outdoors definitely is one. What else do you see as kind of the technological barriers that are going to have to be jumped through to get things to the next level for the field as a whole?
Well, so, you know, AR is, any AR system has three main components. There's sensing, what do I know about the world? There's the system that's running and displaying things to you, and its display and how that works. And then the displays themselves. So am I using just the display of my phone? Am I using a head-mounted display, projectors? The middle one, the computers, are actually getting amazingly good, right? The latest iOS and Android devices are really quite powerful, way more powerful than anything I used in graduate school to build an AR system. The sensing is getting better, but getting from what we have now, which basically is poor quality GPS or tracking visual targets, will still require some work. Now, when you look at what Google is doing with Tango, what Qualcomm is doing with their Smart Terrain extension to Vuforia, those are both serious efforts to try to move away from tracking an image or a target or an object to being able to build and track robustly the world around you.
Yep, yep.
And so with something like, if you look at the Tango demos, you know, people are walking down the hall, tracking, building a map of the environment and tracking off it.
Yeah, which is fascinating. If anybody's listening up and you haven't sifted through YouTube or whatever to look at the Tango demos from Google, that's what the professor's talking about. It's absolutely fascinating work.
And so that kind of work, where we can move away from a small space to an entire building, your entire house, an office building, that's what, you know, you see the beginnings of when you look at that. Now Google's project is still very experimental. If you go and look at Qualcomm Smart Terrain, it's a similar kinds of approaches. If you look at, kind of think about what you see in each of those videos as you're watching, Qualcomm, of course, because their product is an actual commercial product, are focused on making it work really well for the cases that they support, as opposed to just experimenting. But I think together, both of those technologies point toward a not too distant future where, you know, your phone, your tablet, maybe your head mount, will be able to dynamically build an entire model of every room you're in as you're using the device.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, and it's actually amazing when you think about it, because now I could have virtual stuff everywhere. This raises tons of completely unrelated technology.
Yeah.
Right? Which we can talk about.
We will, yeah.
In a bit, but so that side of the technology is getting better. The other side is the display, right? So AR will always be limited if it's limited to laptops, phones, tablets.
Yep, yeah, it won't be immersive. It won't be with you everywhere or exactly where you need it, yep. And I know the Matteo guys are, you know, they're big on drumming home the message that the future of AR is always on. And so I think... Yeah, like you're saying, you know, it used to just be computers, now we're at cell phones. How do you think we'll kind of get beyond all that or take things to the next level?
So I think that it's going to be a while till we have head mounts that are actually immersive, right? So glass, as an example of a commercial attempt, is amazing for what it is, right? It's the first head-worn display that is small and light, doesn't have a wire hanging down.
Yeah, yeah.
And lets us wear it all the time, in theory, and see stuff. But from a point of view of augmented reality, it's still got a long way to go. The display is incredibly tiny. It's off to one side. And really can't be used to overlay content on your view of the world around you.
Yep.
Now, that's actually a really good choice for glass, because if you go back to what I said about there's three components to augmented reality, computer, which is largely being solved, and then sensing and display, if you go and look at some of the parody videos that people have made of glass, where, you know, the guy's got the map up in front of him and runs into a post or trips over something, those parodies actually don't reflect what glass is really like, because it really doesn't cover your vision.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you look at the information you would need about the world around you in order to be able to display stuff everywhere and not have it get in your way, it's astounding the amount of information you need.
Yeah, you'd need a gargantuan battery sitting on the back of your head. I mean,
too. But, you know, the Tango stuff is starting to approach that, right? Now with the depth sensor, I can cause things not to be included by the real world and not to block my view of things. But not the entire world is not created equal. If you were sitting across the desk from me right now and I had AR stuff all over, I wouldn't want any of it to block your face, even if it happened to be floating in the air between us, because, you know, you're a person. You're actually what I'm focused on and what I'm talking to right now.
Yeah.
And so you know, it's not just a question of recognizing the physical structure of the world, but understanding it, knowing what's where. We actually will need to get to some of that before we could have, even if we had the head-mounted displays, be able to wear them all the time. If you consider live TV, so first and 10 line in football, all of the augmentations that get done at the Olympics or car races or sailboat races, those things work because the systems are being tended by real people and they're in highly controlled environments, right? We know where the cameras are.
Exactly. You know, big flat line, big flat field.
Right. And so those sorts of experiences where the content is beautifully integrated is what people will expect and want if they were going to wear a head mount.
Of course, yeah. Well, that's ultimately what's going to make it useful, right? If you're a surgeon and you're operating, or if you're, you know, a guy on the floor in a mechanic shop and you need to, you know, you can't have shoddy stuff. We're going to want something useful, something representative.
Well, it's interesting that you should mention those, because I actually think there's sort of a near-term and a long-term. When you think about vertical market apps, so medical, industrial applications,
yeah,
applications, we'll actually get there a lot sooner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, actually, you know, interestingly enough, and of course you'd expect them to say it, right? But the folks I've interviewed from Augmate and from Matteo have had a similar inkling that, hey, you know, AR wise, it's likely to hit the blue collar deskless guy before it's going to hit you know, the straight white collar knowledge worker guy.
Maybe. I mean, but if you think independent of which kind of verticals. But when you look at, say, so you mentioned medicine.
Yes.
The amount of money, the cost of all the equipment in an operating room is astounding, right?
Yep.
The cost of people time and the cost if something goes wrong, not including money, just the human cost, is also pretty high. So adding a lot of instrumentation, requiring people to move slowly and work within the constraints of the system is really feasible. So medical is something where we could actually, people have been working on and will actually be doing, could have AR sooner than in a lot of cases. Like real serious, there's graphics overlaid on a real scene.
Yeah.
Industrial as well, I think, you know, the factories tend to be well-structured. I was talking to someone at one of the oil companies who says they go out, if they need to know the state of say, an oil refinery, like maybe often, Alaska or somewhere else that's very remote. And so they'll actually go every few months, take expensive laser scanners, and do full 3D scans of the entire environment, and build a real 3D model that's based on what's really there as opposed to the designs, and then go in, clean it up, and use it to be able to monitor and work remotely in these environments. So these are both examples where some of the usual problems, not knowing what's in the world, not being able to accurately build models of it and track it, you can get around with money.
Well, that's that's it, isn't it? I mean, you know, you can get around them with money. I think, you know, it's curious looking at the domain of robotics and how the leaps and bounds that have happened in robotics, not because of robotics, but because of cell phones. Now, there's a lot of developments in cell phones in terms of sensors and processors and battery efficiency that's developed in cell phones that's allowed for robotics to get to the next level, and really so many more people have access to it, because the money was getting dumped into cell phone tech, because everybody's going to buy a smartphone. They're buying new ones all the time. There's a lot of money there. There's a lot of big companies dumping a lot of money there. And it seems like the places where that same money dump, real economic value is going to be with AR is where it's going to develop, right?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, there's an interesting tension between the acceleration of consumer technology and these sort of what people in the vertical markets are willing and able to use.
Yeah.
I mean, the military over the last, you know, decade has moved as much as they can toward using, you know, common off-the-shelf technologies versus custom technologies for this reason. So I think, you know, moving forward, those verticals will have a huge impact, and they'll happen before some of the consumer applications.
So yeah, let's catch up on that, just because I know we're a little bit more than halfway through. If you know, in terms of those future applications, you know, you've been in this field for a very, very long time, and you know, compared to, you know, the field, I mean, it's not a field that's been around quite as long as, you know, something like biology. But you know, you've been in this field for an awful long time. In terms of what might make that transition into AR being something other than, you know, a nerdy thing that some people know about but most people don't, something that AR really hitting the scene, in terms of broader penetration across, whether it's verticals, consumers, where for you, you know, the coming decade, half decade, do you think, like, you know what, here's where I think it really might apply and it might cross that threshold of commonality?
So I'll answer that by saying that I think what needs to happen is for us to stop thinking about AR as a thing, as a field, as a technology. So, you know, a long time ago, back when I was an undergraduate, 3D graphics was a thing, right?
It was
3D graphics machines, and if you were going to do something that used 3D graphics, you had to write it for that machine, for that display.
Yep.
And it was very limited, and it was hard for people to imagine that any normal person would ever have access to 3D graphics.
Yep.
And similarly, I think AR is a similar thing, right? So what is augmented reality? It's simply a way of, when it's appropriate, displaying virtual stuff, virtual content, in situ, in the relevant context.
Yep.
So typically for me, that means overlaying it on the physical world. But most of the things you do in your life, most of the apps you use, don't require that. But they might at a certain period of time.
No, they completely might, yeah.
And so I think what's going to be required is not necessarily the technology shift, although that will be required, but, you know, if Google and Apple and Microsoft decide, you know, AR is a thing, and we're going to actually make AR widgets in our apps. And what does that mean? Well, it means that instead of Yelp having the monocle mode in their Yelp app, that allows me to look around. Instead, Yelp can say, hey, I'm going to create my AR content widgets and update them as you're using the app, right? Because we know what stuff's around you and what you're searching for. And, oh, if you switch into AR mode, then you'll see that stuff. But if you're using a different app and Yelp happens to still be running, and you switch into AR mode in that app, you'll see the Yelp stuff too. And you'll see your stuff from Facebook, and you'll see, you know, that tour of the city that you were taking because it's a new city. And so I think the real essential thing is for us to find a way to make AR work better in the context of our current devices. And it's going to be those technologies and techniques that are going to then show the value of kind of always on, always available augmented reality.
Yep.
So in the current iPhone, if I use an iPhone, and when you open it up, you can, instead of unlocking, you can just open up the camera and take a quick picture, right?
Yeah.
And imagine instead that when you open it up to take a picture, all of your AR content was there, right? And you don't know if anything is going to be useful right now, but you know, maybe your one of your friends sent you a little 3D AR animated birthday card, and you happen to be near the place that they put it in the world, you'd see it. And you're not going to be like poking at your AR birthday card app as you walk around the city during the day.
No, yeah, it has to be, yeah, immersed and embedded into whatever you're using already.
There's discovery of content, right?
It's, yep.
All about, to me, the linking things to the physical world has to be always available because, quite frankly, moving around the world is kind of a pain, right? If I have to go over to the grocery store in order to see the AR content in the grocery store, it's not that useful, right? I might like to look up the content while I'm sitting at my desk.
Yeah.
But if I'm walking through the grocery store and I happen to see a bunch of interesting things without having to run an app, that is when we're going to start seeing value to having the stuff out in the world. So I think that is to me the biggest thing, is moving from thinking about AR as apps and technology to saying, what is it going to take to make it possible for any of the computer systems, computer programs we use, to add a little AR to the AR mode when it's appropriate based on what you're doing?
Got it. Where do you think that some of those jumps might happen? It sounds like it's more reasonable in some domains than others. Maybe it'll imply a lot better head-mounted displays before that happens. Maybe it won't. What do you think will get it to be that way? Because in some sense, I certainly agree with you. It's not, AR is not like a thing, right? In some sense, it's also like, I was talking about biology before, you know, there's always some degree of consilience. There's so much crossover with everything else. Biology, you know, sociobiology, there's so many molecular, but you know, there's so many permutations. And AR is, you know, it's, again, like you had said, it's not like, oh, it's housed in this little app. Like, this app has AR in it. AR becomes just like what you had said, you know, the using of virtual things in some kind of real environment. What and where might we see that really happen at scale? Or is it too hard to even make a guess which domains over other ones?
At some level, I think it's hard to guess.
Of course,
right?
Of course.
If you think about the pre-YouTube world, it was hard to imagine the current sort of YouTube environment where everybody, you know, my 9-year-old son wants to create and post Minecraft mod review videos, right? Because he's been watching them and he loves Minecraft. And he wants to do this. It's like, if you had told me 20 years ago that 9-year-old kids would be making and publishing videos,
you'd be just, like, nah, yeah, not happening.
They're not going to be able to upload. How are they going to host it, right?
Yeah.
So at some level, there's a little bit of that, right? So we can't necessarily predict. But, you know, if you think about the trajectory of, a lot of, on the consumer side, social games, education, those sorts of things. There's educational things that are really appropriate for the physical world, whether they're directly tied to the world, like history or social studies, biology, geography, physics, or they're analogy-based, right? You can do a lot of interesting things with math and other sorts of stuff in 3D in the physical world, or at least we hope. And you can see some of that when you go to a grade school or preschool and look at how they use manipulatives and other physical props to try to teach people abstract concepts. So I think there's a lot of potential there, although the technology has to get better and more robust, which is why we don't see too much of it. In the social, I mean, you know, you look at, again, you know, Facebook, Twitter, those things would have been hard to predict beforehand, but people like to share and keep up and consume content that each other are creating. I'm not going to sort of come down on one side or the other of the are we consumers or producers or whatever. But it's pretty clear when you look at social media that people have been drawn to it. Now,
for sure,
what does it mean if social media could now be pushed out into the world, right? There are like little Twitter apps where I can look for nearby tweets, but you know, people really don't tweet with their geolocation that much. And even then, it's not clear that a given tweet is actually relevant to the location that it was tweeted from.
Huh.
I think if it became easy to start, you know, creating virtual graffiti, creating these sort of 3D interactive presentations, creating virtual worlds where I have an online 3D virtual world like a Minecraft or a World of Warcraft or something like that, and I align it or map it somehow to the physical world, and now I can create experiences for people that are my friends or my family or just the world that combine, you know, remote people around the world visiting virtually to physical spaces.
Yeah, talk about that virtual graffiti thing. I like that because I think that's a nice frame, thinking about virtual graffiti, leaving your, you know, I mean, you think about it like vandalism, but it's not in the context you talk about it. You're leaving your mark, your things, your sounds, videos, colors, additional objects, in some kind of an environment for other people to discover or potentially interact with. Speak a little bit to maybe what that could be like. I happen to believe, Blair, that we'll be in that world, right? That AR at some point, yeah. I'm not saying it's an aggregately good thing. I'm not saying it's an aggregately bad thing. But I happen to believe that it'll make a lot more sense to live in a world that's augmented all the time than not, especially from kind of like, do you want to keep your job or not sort of perspective. And I think that'll drive a lot of that. So I happen to think that we will be living in this space much faster than most people believe. But speak to me about what that might look like. You know, you'd mentioned leaving a birthday card in the parking lot where you park in the morning so you could kind of see it when you get there. What else might that imply?
Well, so I think there's a couple of sides to this. The first is sort of, there's all the technology issues. Technology has to be good enough to do it.
Of course.
Over that. But there's just sort of this whole question of how you create and create and lay out and store and locate this content. So I think that has to be solved. And if you, you know, consider the things like the web, the thing that made the web powerful was that anybody could just create a little text file that had some HTML in it. And the HTML didn't really even have to work well, right? They could put it up on a server and other people could see it. And, you know, if there was bugs in the HTML, it might not look right, but you could still get an idea. The key was that it was easy, it was approachable, and it was completely decentralized. So I didn't have to get permission to link into this hypertext database. And because of that, it sort of grew and people discovered stuff. But that it was that ease and the ability to do stuff rapidly and easily. And we're nowhere near that. I mean, the idea, or at least nobody's really pushed hard on figuring that out. This idea of like leaving notes and virtual graffiti is sort of one of the favorite demos that researchers create in both sort of wearable computing and mobile computing and augmented reality, because it's an easy thing to build a simple version of. But you know, if you walk through the buildings outside my office, we're in a little, you know, part of the city with some tall buildings.
Yep.
What I really want to do is, even if we ignore headlines, I want to hold up my phone, look, and sort of draw on the side of the building. And I don't want to have to specify coordinate systems or man.
No. Yeah, you just want to freaking draw on the thing.
And so there's a bunch of infrastructure that's needed to make that happen. Just, you know, how does my phone know that there's a building there, right? And so that stuff I can see that happens. The other side of it is one of discovery, right? So, and security and privacy. And
yeah.
A lot of people who've worked in this imagine that all the content I create just gets thrown in this big soup, right? So I create an object, I sketch the side of the building, and everybody sees it. Well, that works for the demo, but in practice, it's not going to work at all, right? You walk into Times Square,
you'd have way too much graffiti.
Drive down the highway, instead of like kids throwing snowballs at cars, they're putting virtual brick walls in the middle of the highway.
Yeah, yeah, no good.
So clearly that's not going to work. But, you know, you look at the web, and the web works because there's indexes that people like Google and Microsoft create.
Yep.
That allows you to search for things. And then you go somewhere and you experience it. So I think that notion of intentionally going and finding channels of information or clusters of information that have either been, you know, generated by search or by generated by individuals is one way that can be made tractable. There's an interesting conflict, right? Search works. It's on the web because it's keyword and content based. But if you cross that with location, we either start getting missing things because I've searched for birthday stuff and you created something and didn't tag it birthday and now I don't see it.
Yeah.
So how that would work in practice in a real system is still not clear. But I think that to me is an interesting area. And it's really a question of, how do we really enable authoring, and how do we build a tractable system that works as easily as the web, but doesn't have the downsides? You know, one of the analogies that I use when I talk about this is, if you've ever been in something like Second Life, which, much like the web, you can create, get a little bit of space and put whatever you want in there, right?
Yep.
But the difference with Second Life and with the web is that is the spatial organization. So if my website happens to be the URL that's just two digits away from, you know, an adult website, visit my website, you're not going to glance to the left and see the adult website, right? It's just every URL, every IP address is completely separate.
Yeah.
When you have this spatial stuff, you have new issues that we need to deal with. I think that's one of the challenges, but it's an interesting challenge.
Yeah. How will we keep everything organized and be able to sort and sift through it in a way that we want, sort of like we try to do with Google, right? Like you had mentioned, you know, you could spell a word a little bit differently. It would apply a whole bunch of different searches, but you don't have to do that. You just kind of search for exactly what you want and you pull it up. But if you're in the real world, is it as easy to categorize and put things where they need to be? Or, you know, would kids be able to put virtual brick walls in front of augmented reality car screens and freak people out?
So I think that's really interesting. And this, you know, ties into all these larger issues with augmented reality of privacy, security, safety, and so on that I think are going to become more prevalent as the technology gets better.
Yeah, I'm happy to go on for another little bit. I realize we're a little bit past a half hour here, but for you, if there's a smidgen to go into just a few of them that might be something to consider, something to think about, something that inevitably companies, researchers, developers in this space are going to have to run into, what are some of those?
So I think the easy way to think about it is that I think augmented reality is, at least in the privacy security space, is very much aligned with wearables like Google is and the issues that are starting to come up with the Internet of Things. So pervasive, always connected devices that are increasingly popular in our homes, offices, whatever. And that's basically, so if you think about these hypothetical AR system where I walk around, like Tango, where I walk around my house and it's building a map so that I can display stuff, who has access to that information, right? So some company writes a game that I can play in my house and it based on the structure of my house, it adapts the game and builds cool.
Yeah, models. Yeah, you can bounce the ball off of the walls and right. Out the windows and yeah.
So now I've given an incredibly detailed 3D textured model of my house.
Yeah.
They can see the paintings on the walls, the brand of TV, what kind of computers I have, maybe the jewelry on my wife's dresser. All of that's there. And am I going to give that to every company that creates, or any random person on the internet that creates a little AR experience for my house? I hope not.
Yeah.
Right now, these are questions that a small number of people are starting to ask. So from an AR perspective, that's kind of the extreme view. So the kinds of apps we imagine require, for them to work well, to achieve the level of visual fidelity, say, that you see in sports on TV, require the kind of information that you might not be comfortable giving them. And this is, you know, and then if you combine that with all of these other devices that we're starting to wear, that we're starting to have, you know, once every appliance that you buy and put in your house is connected and is sending information to someone, once, you know, your Fitbits and your energy monitors with a power in your house, the water monitors.
Refrigerator, yeah. What's in your fridge?
Everything is connected and analyzing and inferring. And then you combine it with a highly precise 3D model that can be time synchronized with that stuff. It becomes kind of a, privacy is gone at that point.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it almost seems as though, and some people have said, Blair, I mean, I forget who the researcher was, one of the folks that worked on kind of the internet in and of itself in the early days, would mention that, you know, that it seems relatively inevitable that maybe privacy is gone, and maybe we should all sort of accept that, but it seems as though there will be a lot of pushback specifically on some really private stuff, such as you had mentioned, you know, the exact layout of your house, or you know, if you're seeing through glasses that are overlaying something, you know, and somebody can hack into that, and you know, you're in your home with your family, that's you know, that's way worse than them checking out an email, you know, so, potentially.
So I think the people who basically say privacy is gone are wrong.
Okay, got it. Interesting.
And, I think, you know, we deal with it the way we've dealt with everything, right? Through a combination of technical, policy, and legal issues, right? With video cameras, with all kinds of technologies, audio recording, everything over the years, there has been things that are possible that we've decided as a society we aren't going to allow, right? And we just have to pay attention and not fall into this trap. I mean, a lot of the pundits who are saying privacy is gone, everybody just wants to share everything. Yeah, they happen to be VCs, they happen to be Silicon Valley entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
They want privacy to be gone because it really benefits the kinds of things they want to do if people accept this premise, to be kind of blunt about it, right? So I think we need to, like, look at what we want our environment to be like. You know, simple example, all of these devices are collecting and going to be soon collecting and sending information off to services, right? My
yep.
Nest thermostats, my connected Samsung TV.
That's it.
Whatever. Well, all it takes is expectations and laws and policy that says, no, you actually can't do that. What you need to do is create within every one of these devices or the ability to recognize and connect to some sort of little box that every house has, because maybe it's part of my power connection, that is a little house portal. And that portal is going to collect all this information. And then by default, I as a user it doesn't get sent off. I have to give you permission. And maybe the mechanism for that permission is on the device, right? I have to flick the switch or I have to configure it in the TV controls. But I as a consumer, as a homeowner, have the option to only send that stuff aggregated, only send it in crude chunks that doesn't give the kind of privacy breach that I want. And when we started thinking about the whole house modeling that we talked about with the games, well, you know, I just have to construct environments to run your applications that only give you information you need. It's pretty easy what the analogies are. On your phone right now, apps have to ask for permission to use the camera, the location, the microphone. It's going to be more complicated in the case of AR, but this notion that apps only get what they need and what you're willing to give them, and it's up to the apps to adapt to those situations, is a pretty sort of easy vision of the future. We just have to be willing to engage with it, not just say, well, I really want to use Facebook because all my cousins are on Facebook, so I'm going to accept all the things I don't like about Facebook. Because there's no competition and because we have this de facto system that doesn't require the kinds of privacy or security that we want. And so I think that if we just sort of charge headlong and let researchers like me and companies and entrepreneurs define what these technologies are capable of, because that's what they need for their apps, then we could end up in a really bad place.
Yeah, I'm very much with you on that, Blair. I mean, not that I'm a pessimist, not that I think, oh, the entrepreneurs are terrible or the researchers are terrible, but just that on the aggregate, we as a society, if it's going to be influencing everybody, will want some yielding capacity to sort of define what those policies and structures are that allow what a level of pervasiveness into whose lives and when. I think that those bigger decisions are of just massive import, especially when we talk about something like immersive AR and VR. So I'm 100% with you on that, Blair.
Okay.
Big time. I more than appreciate you shedding light on that topic as well as the technical side, because for me, I think that's where a lot of the fascination is. If we're here to do good, I think considering the good and considering the bigger picture is a necessary part of that. If people want to learn more about you, more about your research, or maybe even what's going on at Georgia Tech, I know you guys have some rather kind of ahead of the curve projects, including Argon. Anybody who hasn't Googled that can go check it out. If they want to learn more about you, where would they go?
So my lab's website is AEL@.tech.edu. But the easiest way to find me is just type Blair McIntyre into Google or Bing. Pretty much everything that comes up will be related to me, my lab, and my research, and you can find me that way.
Bada bing. Yeah, there's got to be some other Blair McIntyre, but you're lucky enough that you're able to dominate. That's a good thing.
Got to go pretty far down the search results. It was rough going when Tony Blair's envoy to the Middle East was Donald McIntyre, because those two were...
Yeah, Blair and McIntyre. Yeah, that was pretty... Yeah, but you at least you got your rankings back. That's what matters. Yeah. That's the benefit of, you know, my name is Dan Fagel. I mean, you know, there really aren't any other Dan Fagels to compete with, you know, luckily.
Yep.
So, okay, cool. I'll make sure that people can check that out. And Blair, thanks a ton for hanging out today, brother.
No problem.
Cool. Hey, thanks for tuning in, guys. If you're an entrepreneur or a future thinker, with an interest in businesses, transitions, or technologies that have the potential to alter human potential, then make sure you check out techemergence.com. It's our main blog site where you can see all of our other interviews with top startup leaders, entrepreneurship experts, and folks in the domain of technology, cutting-edge emerging technology. If you have a particular interest in how technology can affect the future of human consciousness and our conscious experience, and be sure to also check out sentientpotential.com. There we explore a lot of the ethical considerations and really serious moral matters of emerging technologies, in addition to interviews with great philosophers and technology experts of our day. More than anything else, always feel free to reach out if you can find us via email. You can reach out to us there or whatever other way. Find us on the blog. Be sure to drop comments. We believe that the serious conversation about the future is not only open-minded, but also interdisciplinary and multifaceted. So we'd like nothing more than be able to glean your ideas as well. So with that being said, with the best of intentions for a brilliant future, this is Dan Fagela signing off. And we'll see you next week.